Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. As I just found out, Monday is Columbus Day. And with that, you know, I have worked every holiday since I started broadcasting. But because Columbus Day is such a politically correct trigger for the leftists, I might actually take Columbus Day off. You'll have to tune in to find out if I'm going to be live or if I'm going to just do a rebroadcast of one of my favorite shows. With that, let me tell you this, that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, 1798Part2.org, and RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that is going to it will end these fulcrums and this leverage that the leftists have created, and the way they are moving our Republican Constitution in a direction to our own demise. This is the only show that actually has the solution to stopping that and undoing all of their damage that they have done. And in doing so, you will find that we will actually be in a much better place and far more successful as a republic. And so I will just leave that to you to actually be the judge. Consider reading my academic argument on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Right there on the homepage, I have an irrefutable argument. I also beg that you read the description of the process, as well as take a look at the model. If you have not watched my video on reclaimingtherepublic.org, just go to the Take Action page, watch that video, and you will see myself presenting the argument itself. It's about 30 minutes long, and I beg that you actually take the time to watch that. If you do, you will get it. You will understand just how far we have been indoctrinated to thinking about the Constitution as some noble guide of governance, or, you know, just some living document that we, the left and the Democrats, and our, should say, democracy can move and change via the sentiments of the public. That is not how our constitutional republic was established. Even though you've heard me say that we are a nation of sovereigns, that the people are the ultimate sovereigns, but the only process in changing the Constitution, it is not by democracy, it is by the Article 5 process. And because they have failed to follow the Article 5 process, well, my friends, we've got a lot of work to do. And in speaking of a lot of work, I have to grovel a little bit because I can't do it all. And I don't think the good Lord wants me to do it all. I think he wants you and every good, righteous citizen, patriot, I should say, not just a citizen, but a patriot who is willing to do what it takes. And what I mean by that is, you know, some people are willing to make phone calls. Some people are willing to do research. You don't have to get in harm's way. If you want to, there'll be opportunities for that, of course. But I am telling you that we really, this is not a revolution that will be fought with, you know, guns, knives, and weapons of the conventional sense. The weapon we will use is the Constitution, and the armament and or shield we will use is the Constitution. And getting in harm's way, well, I'm going to tell you that the left, the Antifa, the extreme racist left, whether that be the KKK, the BLM, doesn't matter, the white supremacists, all of those people, even though they try to dub those as the alt-right and what have you, those are not people on the right. The right is the side of liberty. The left is the side of subjugation. Do not let them get you confused. And I've talked a lot about that. Anybody that wants to subjugate somebody else or not allow, you know, the concept of everybody being free to choose and being able to have equal opportunity, not equal outcome, and those fundamental principles that our framers established, then they are not, if they're not in line with those fundamental principles, they are not on the right. They are on the subjugative side, the left, or what I'd like to say is the black side of the scale of liberty. Anyway, if you want to get involved, like I said, all you got to do is send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Thank you, Bill, in Texas, for reaching out. I will get to you. I'll send you a ping. But that being said, there is plenty of room. There's plenty of opportunity, and I'm not having people just, you know, digging a ditch just so you can fill it in. I don't believe in that. We used to do that in the Marine Corps just for fun. And because there was nothing else to do and you had to give people something to do, but that's not what we're doing here. So forgive me for laughing. It's just, you know, that brings back memories. Anywho, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Now, there is another way that you can get involved other than just listening. And as a matter of fact, I want to thank you and I appreciate the fact that you do tune in and you are listening. I hope that you are starting to compare and contrast the content on this show in contrast to all of the other conservative entertainers. The conservative entertainers are, you know, probably giving you their, you know, their equally insightful points and issues of the day, but not one of them has the tangible solution that will really end all of this. It's not about this upcoming election. If it is about this upcoming election, if there's anything that is contingent on this upcoming election, it is getting the right state legislators into office. We've got 7,383 state legislators that we need to educate to get them to act, because they are the ones, as a Republican form of government, as our representatives, they are the ones that need to step forward and shut this Leviathan down. And they can do that. And as I say, you can always join the Constitution Club. I would highly recommend you check them out. ConstitutionClub.ning.com. And when you go there, it's free to sign up. So please, just take the time, sign up, go check out your state, check out your county. If you're the only one in that county, because there's a lot of counties, then sign up and become a leader in that county and start working. And if you're not already in your county associated and working with your party, the GOP party, then you need to reach out, find out who your PCO is. If there is no PCO, step up and become the PCO. You will now become an actual leader in the grassroots movement. And in doing so, you can start injecting the audit concept and republic review right there in your county. It is that easy to really start taking charge and leading. You do not have to allow people to force and manage an agenda under your nose. We've got to stop that, and we're getting into the details of what and how to do all of that. But as I also say in my opening dialogue, as I looked and I really did scan through the news, I was really surprised that I was just hoping to see Russia, Russia, Russia. You know, we got to get back on this collusion, you know, and we're going to impeach Trump because of this Russian collusion, because obviously the Kavanaugh thing is gone. I don't know if that dog has given up on the savoriness or the lack of savoriness of that bone anymore since Kavanaugh. Like I said weeks ago, he was going to get nominated. The fact that they have denigrated and literally assaulted him and his family and the things that they have done, I hope that that resonates with you regarding moving forward into these elections. And start poking any of your moderate friends that tend to vote Democrat. You got all sorts of opportunities to poke them in the eye over that crap. There's just no reason for that. And I would love to actually start bringing up, you know, the issue of Michelle Obama being a transgender, because there's actually some allegations out there that are proving that, or make a good argument, I should say. No law evidence. But let me point out that this allegation also points to the daughters of the Obamas being actually the daughters of a different family, that they are temp loan daughters, that there's no birth records. I mean, this is a very interesting thing. And since the left has gone down this really dark path, let's find out the truth about the Obamas. You know, they are drawing a retirement severance from us, or retirement pay, and they are receiving basically emoluments in the post or former president position. I honestly think that they've duped us. I think that they should be impeached. And yes, you can impeach a former president because they are not a regular person anymore. They have moved into a status and they maintain security. They maintain access. They need to be impeached. They actually have a podium. They can go around and speak as the former president, which means something. And that is an emolument. It's almost like being a prince. You may not be a king of something, but oh, well, a prince of something. And these former presidents should be impeached, all of them. The Bushes, Clinton, and Obama, they should be impeached. Even Jimmy Carter, yes, he did have lust for a woman. And it's not that he should be impeached for that. He should be impeached for his actions afterwards, because we should have a high bar and a high standard. But as I say, there is no news, and so it is left up to us to actually get the federal government into compliance. So that's why I ask for your help, because I can't do it all, but I'm willing to do everything I possibly can. And with that, I will even do more after this hard break. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back with some things for you to think about. Please stay tuned. I'll be right back after this. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So as I was saying, and I was going to go into this little bit of a rant, so I figured let me just wait until I get back. As I said a few weeks back, Mr. Kavanaugh would be confirmed. I knew that the Democrats would just not roll over. I knew that they would try to use as much hyperbole as they possibly could, or hyperbolic talk and ranting. The important question, though, is this. as you see the left become more and more emboldened and belligerent and hostile, when are you going to take a stand? The Bolsheviks is what I like to call the left, and I'll get into that in just a second. But the Bolsheviks are not only overtly aggressive, they are getting away with attacking good people. They're attacking people that aren't even out as ideologues opposing them or what have you. They are literally just attacking good people. And we cannot tolerate leftist racists like the KKK, Nazis, or radicals like BLM, Antifa, pro-choicers. Not that the Nazis and KKK aren't radical enough, but we can't allow them. And even the pro-choicers, I don't know if you heard in the news, a pro-choicer attacked a person that was supporting life. We can't let them continue to get away with this kind of violence. What that means is that there is no rule of law. We really have to return to the rule of law. We've seen with the Kavanaugh process that they're getting away with the rule of rumor. Not only have they become violent, but they're hacking, they're breaking into offices, homes, and so forth, and violating every law to intimidate and cause harm. You need to understand that they do not care about differing ideas. They are out to compel you and I into behaving, or if we don't behave, then we're no longer of any use to their society in their eyes. This goes back to that scale of liberty. I've told you about this. Those who are on the side of liberty, that everybody should be free to choose, do not believe that somebody that clings to or is enamored with the communist ideology can ever believe in liberty, that people should choose on their own. If they are telling you that, oh yeah, we can differ in opinions, and oh yeah, sure, you can vote however you want, that is a lie. They just have not been able to refute you or being able to basically close the deal in taking care of you, shutting you up, or what have you. And so with that, what is it going to take? What is it going to take for you to take a stand against this type of behavior? I want you to think about this concept of the Bolsheviks and the Bolshevik Revolution. I want you to understand who the Bolsheviks were and who they were back then, right? I want you to understand that back in those days, they were Lenin's useful idiots. You understand what I'm saying? They didn't really understand anything. So the question I have is, who are the useful idiots today? Who do you think the useful idiots are? Do you think it's just the leftists? Huh? No. The Bolsheviks today are our kids. They're the kids that are out there that are learning from the indoctrination centers. They're the kids that are basically being lied to, and they are the ones that are literally believing hook, line, and sinker this whole agenda that communism is good and that we have the ability to, give everybody everything they want. And so what I'm just trying to tell you is that we have the Bolshevik Revolution set up. We have, and I've been telling you, that every year there are 10 million kids that are entering into the electorate. 10 million a year. They're all indoctrinated and they're being taught the lies and propaganda. This concept of college for all sounds great, but what happens when everyone has a degree? And let's just say they all have really good degrees. Let's put it into economics terms. What happens when everyone is growing tomatoes for sale? What's the value of a tomato on a market where everybody is trying to sell tomatoes? They're worthless. Degrees are absolutely worthless if everybody has one. It doesn't make society any better. And as a matter of fact, society is far better when we are all given an opportunity to pursue skills. You've heard me rant about how much plumbers make. Shoot, plumbers make a lot more than a nurse who goes and makes, you know, or gets, I should say, a BSRN. That's 5 years of education plus continuing education that they have to do every year. Are you kidding me? But my point is that society can't have 100% nurses, because then we won't have anybody to take care of the plumbing. We won't have anybody to take care of other things. The whole point of having entry-level jobs and higher-paid jobs and higher-paid jobs is to incentivize people to learn skills and to do something with themselves. They don't have to necessarily, and we don't all want everybody to be, you know, trained to be the general, because what happens when everybody are generals? Then you don't have any privates to do the job. And that's what America is struggling today, because as a matter of fact, I talk to contractors all the time. As a good friend of mine is a general contractor, and he's saying that he cannot find kids that are willing to do work, that are willing to learn skills or what have you. They all think that they're going to go off and get a degree, and they are literally out of shape and unable to do the job. There are very few kids that recognize that, you know what, I can make good money in becoming a contractor, in doing labor or what have you. There is good money to be made. And I'm telling you, plumbing, electrician, and everything else is a good paying job. There's nothing to be ashamed about that. There's nothing to be ashamed of not being a doctor. But these kids really believe that the world owes them everything and that we'll have a world of doctors. And then nobody will be able to fix their car. As I used to tell people, and a good friend of mine taught me this when I was in the Marine Corps, that it takes a college degree to crash an aircraft, but it takes a high school diploma to get that aircraft to function and to fly. Think about that. Something to think about for you today. Now, I also want to get into, because I've talked a lot about Marshall and some of the damage that he has done, and I want to give you the Pernicious Seven, right? There's the Magnificent Seven. Well, there's a Pernicious Seven, and these are the seven cases where Marshall, John Marshall, who was the protege of Alexander Hamilton, literally did so much damage in lying and obfuscating the truth and burying reality in his opinions in these seven cases that literally created unconstitutional footings for people to come back later as they slowly injected this concept of case law and precedents into the Constitution, which there's no connection, there's no reality to that. They didn't have case law. When Madison was talking as president, he didn't say, there's precedents here where we can... No, there is no precedents. The Constitution's a contract. It's not a concept of legality. It is not common law or civil law. It is a contract. And this concept of the lawyers injecting constitutional... Anybody that tells you that there is constitutional law, they've got something in it for them. Anybody that believes that lie, there's got to be something in it for them, because there is nothing in the Constitution or in the ratification debates that clearly delineate this concept of constitutional law, that you can actually move the Constitution and make something constitutional because of some series of precedents and determinations and opinions made by lawyers as well as jurists. These are activists that are trying to literally undermine our system, and our system does not and has no allowance for facilitating opinions in making changes to what is constitutional. Sorry, I don't care what Blackmun said. There are no emanations from penumbras within the Constitution to grant a person some form of privacy while they're in a pregnancy clinic or an abortion clinic. But let me get into the pernicious seven. Marbury v. Madison in 1803 was the self-aggrandizing of the court, and the court started reaching beyond its jurisdiction. It had no jurisdiction to be able to reach down and grab cases, what they call judicial review. There is nothing within the Constitution that allows the court to do that. They just did it. And instead of the Congress reeling them in, what they did was they just kind of go, oh, wow, did you see that? Because every time the Supreme Court has been able to make a move and aggrandize the federal government, Congress and the president and the federal government has gained, if you understand what I'm saying. So I've got six more of the Pernicious Seven coming up as soon as we get back. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back after this. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So in following up, as I said, these are the pernicious seven. These are the seven hallmark or landmark rulings that John Marshall used that later on other jurists, other lawyers used to build upon in John Marshall's unconstitutional, or I should say delusional, assertions that the federal government has powers that they're not supposed to have. And he basically utilized the four mystical clauses, being the Necessary and Proper Clause, the Supremacy Clause, the General Welfare and Defense Clause, and the Commerce Clause. Actually, he did not use the Commerce Clause. That was something that was used later by different jurists. So these seven, like I said, Marbury v. Madison, and that was property rights as well. This concept of a person having property rights to a government job is bullark. It's just baloney. It is a fabrication. There is nothing in the Constitution. It was literally a delusional assertion. And the reason Marbury v. Madison was ruled that way is because Marshall wanted to make sure that Marbury was seated on the bench. And so he guaranteed property rights to that, to make that happen. And I am hoping that Marshall has made amends somehow between now and you know, between then and by the time his demise, because he's got to be suffering. He's got to be, you know, in a very hot place at this point in time. But Fletcher v. Peck was another self-aggrandizing, asserting the necessary and proper clause. Sturgis v. Crowninshield, 1819, another assertion of supremacy and necessary and proper. Dartmouth v. College v. Woodward, and this was an assertion, this is a contract law case that also did the same thing. The necessary and proper and the supremacy clause, he ran amok over. The McCullough v. Maryland, same, necessary and proper, and the supremacy clause. Cohen's v. Virginia and Gibbons v. Ogden, 1821 and 1824. And in the, I believe it was the Gibbons v. Ogden, it was another a contract case. But this is where he started wandering into the general welfare. Now, you got to remember, who was president at this time? Well, by this time, the last framer who really, really understood the Constitution, which was Madison, because Monroe was a framer, but he didn't go to the Constitutional Convention debates. He was at the ratification debates, and he understood the limitations, but I don't think he understood the Constitution as well as Madison to stand up and refute Marshall. Madison was the... What was the man? He was the one that could actually refute Hamilton, Marshall, and all of these nefarious people that were trying to undermine the Constitution. So my point is that here are the seven hallmark cases that literally were used later on so that the federal government could self-aggrandize itself in getting us to believe that they could create these departments such as the Department of Interior, the Department of Justice, the Department of Agriculture, and so forth. And in doing so, they self-aggrandized their role and they started stealing, usurping roles, responsibilities, and powers that belonged to the states. So next week, I know I haven't done this yet, and every time there's something that's come up that has kept me from getting into Federalist Paper number 49, but next week I'm going to get into it for you. In addition to that, I am also going to dig through Jefferson's book, Notes on the State of Virginia. I do not have a physical copy, but you can get yourself a PDF copy if you are interested in that. And that way, you can actually, you know, read for yourself some of these insightful concepts that Jefferson was injecting into how to enforce constitutional contracts. And so, because this whole concept of what GR is doing is really not GR doing this. This is actually Jefferson and Madison talking about this new age of constitutions. If you understand, as we've talked about this before, in the old references, the sovereignty was pretty much general, and they created general powers. And there was a this... Now, the general government and general powers are two different things. The general government is the federal government. It's a government that is created to provide a specific service. What that service is whether that is enumerated and or general. And so in our Constitution, we have an enumerated Constitution, which means that these are the only things that the federal government or the general government can do. The only way the federal government can do anything that is not listed there is amending the Constitution, and then they can do it. So without an amendment, the federal government cannot constitutionally and legally execute the powers of the Department of Transportation, the Department of Justice, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Health and Human Services, and so forth and so on. If you understand what I just said, that means that over 80% of what the federal government is spending your money on, they don't have the authority to do because it is not within the enumerated powers. It is that simple. So to galvanize the concept of enforcing the Constitution, I'm going to get into this concept of what Jefferson spoke about in the Notes on the State of Virginia, as well as the Federalist Papers next week. And you will recognize the fact that they didn't use the term audit like I do, or this concept of republic review like I do. That's more of a New Age term. But I want you to understand that, you know, what they were referring to were a convention. They did everything in conventions. They practically decided, you know, lunch in a convention. And so if you look at contract law and how they looked at the Constitution and they called it a contract and or a compact, it was a hard, fast contract. There was no way to change it. That's why they put in Article 5 to give you a mechanism to change that contract. Over the years, since the establishment of the Constitution, it wasn't until the 20th century where contracts started really becoming more and more important, and it created this huge discipline within law. And over the years, because contracts were literally established by, you know, by the shaking of the hand and agreeing on what one person was going to do and what another person was going to do. This contract concept wasn't just within this Constitution. Contract agreements and contract disputes go all the way back to Moses' time. We've been doing contracts for a long time. It is only since, like I said, the 20th century where we have started getting very detailed, especially in the legal profession, in defining it. But bottom line, as the contract is defined, that is how it is legally bound. And the reason I go through these ratification debates is to give you the evidence of precisely how hard these are legally bound. So I'm going to read some more citations from Mr. Wilson for you out of the Pennsylvania ratification debate. And as I do so, please ask yourself this question. Are the words that I am reading from Mr. Wilson today and McKean, are these the words of lies and deceit, or have we been told lies and deceit by our education system, lawyers, and politicians? And so Mr. Wilson says this: it is urged as a general objection to this system that the powers of Congress are unlimited and undefined, and that they will be the judges in all cases of whatever is necessary and proper for them to do. To bring this subject to your view, I need not do more than point to the few words in the Constitution, beginning at the 8th section, Article 1. The Congress, it says, shall have power, etc. I need not read over the words, but I leave it to every gentleman to say whether the powers are not as accurately and minutely defined as can be done on the same subject, in the same language. The old Constitution is as strongly marked on this subject, and even the concluding clause with which so much fault has been found gives no more or other power, nor does it to any degree go beyond the particular enumeration. For when it's said that Congress shall have the power to make all laws which are necessary, shall be necessary and proper, those words are limited and denned by the following, quote, for carrying into execution the foregoing powers, close quote. It is saying no more than that the powers we have already given shall be effectually carried into execution. That is how tight that contract was. That necessary and proper that John Marshall liked to smear into his rulings was literally a violation based on the definitions, not only at the ratification debate he attended, but every single ratification debate, as I've read them to you, they all clearly delineate that the federal government is limited to these enumerated powers, and that the necessary and proper clause literally are for carrying into execution those powers and those powers alone. So this is really important. Are you getting this? This is so important because when people start telling you that the federal government could do anything necessary and proper, you can poke them in the eye and say no. You forget that that necessary and proper was denned or or strictly limited to or defined by the foregoing powers. That's all they could do that would be necessary and proper. As I was talking to Keith Broders yesterday over those types of things. Anyway, as we move forward, I have a little bit more of the Pennsylvania debate, so please stay tuned and I'll be right back after this. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And as I was saying, Mr. Wilson also went on to say that there are two kinds of government, and this is him stating this, that where general government or where general powers is intended. And remember, I talked about general powers and general government. There are two kinds of government. That where general power is intended to be given to the legislature, and that where the powers are particularly enumerated. In the last case, the implied result is that nothing more is intended to be given than what is so enumerated, unless it results from the nature of the government itself. On the other hand, when general legislative powers are given, then the people part with their authority and, on the gentleman's principle of government, retain nothing. But in a government like the proposed one, there can be no necessity for a Bill of Rights, for, on my principle, the people never part with their power. Enumerate all the rights of men. I am sure, sir, that no gentleman in the late convention would have attempted such a thing. I believe the honorable speakers in opposition on this floor were members of the assembly which appointed delegates to that convention. If it had been thought proper to have sent them into that body, how luminous would the dark conclave have been? And so, one of the things that I love the fact that he points out here is that in a general government that has been granted general powers, remember the general government is to do this. When they're granted general powers, they can do anything and everything. But if they're given enumerated powers, then that is all they can do. I also loved the way it was stated in North Carolina. Yeah, it was North Carolina. They looked at the Constitution as a power of attorney. If you gave via power of attorney your friend there or your an associate that you're working with today. You gave that person power of attorney to sell some of your property or a very particular piece of your property. Does that mean that they can assume that they can sell every piece of your property? That they can sell literally all things? No, I do not think so. What I am here to tell you is that that power of attorney is limited in scope to the very specific thing that you have delegated to that person to sell. And therefore, what I am telling you is that the Constitution delegated very specific powers, just like a power of attorney, to the general government. It's really that simple. And I know that I go on and on about this, but I'm trying to give you this pile of evidence. There is so much overwhelming evidence. And this isn't just obscure artifacts. This evidence that I'm giving you out of the ratification debates are actually definitions that are legally binding to the contract. There is no wiggle room here, my friends. The only way that the federal government can have general powers is that we create an amendment and by 3/4 of the states delegate to them general powers to do anything and everything they want. If you really want to be that stupid and give them unlimited powers, then by all means, get your 3/4 of the states together to do it. But I'm telling you, that would be the greatest mistake that we could create and make or commit. There we go. Now, Mr. Wilson also said this. Even in a single government, if the powers of the people rest on the same establishment as in expressed in this Constitution, a Bill of Rights is by no means a necessary measure. In a government possessed of enumerated powers, such a measure would be not only unnecessary, but preposterous and dangerous. Whence comes this notion that in the United States, there is no security without a Bill of Rights? Have the citizens of South Carolina no security for their liberties? They have no Bill of Rights. Are the citizens of the eastern side of Delaware less free or less secured in their liberties than those on the western side? The state of New Jersey has no Bill of Rights. The state of New York has no Bill of Rights. The state of Connecticut and Rhode Island have no Bill of Rights. I know not whether I have exactly enumerated the states who have not thought it necessary to add a Bill of Rights to their constitutions, but this enumeration, sir, will serve to show by experience as well as principle that even in single governments, a Bill of Rights is not an essential or necessary measure. But in a government consisting of enumerated powers such as proposed in the United States, a Bill of Rights would not only be unnecessary, but in my humble judgment, highly imprudent. In all societies, there are many powers and rights which cannot be particularly enumerated. A Bill of Rights annexed to a constitution is an enumeration of the powers reserved. If we attempt an enumeration, everything that is not enumerated presumed to be given. The consequence is that an imperfect enumeration would throw all implied power into the scale of the government, and the rights of the people would be rendered incomplete. On the other hand, an imperfect enumeration of the powers of government reserves all implied powers to the people. And that means that the Constitution becomes incomplete. But of the two, it is much safer to run the risk on the side of the Constitution. For an omission in the enumeration of the powers of government is neither so dangerous nor important as an omission in the enumeration of the rights of the people. Interesting, isn't it? So Mr. McKean also adds to this, and says, and in declaring that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. This has at least, or at last, been conceded that though it is explicit enough, yet it gives to Congress no further powers than those already enumerated. I will read this again, because this is the quotation out of the Constitution in Article 6, that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof. So in other words, laws that they're making in pursuant of the Constitution. So it's being derived from the powers of the Constitution. And all treaties made, so in other words, every constitutional treaty that the Senate has constitutionally ratified, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And then he explains this. This has at least been conceded that though it is explicit enough, yet it gives to Congress no further powers than those already enumerated. Those that first said it gave Congress the power of superseding the state governments cannot persist in it, for no person can, with a tolerable face, read the clause over and infer that such may be the consequence. They're clearly defining that the supremacy clause only makes the laws that are constitutional, the laws that are tied to the enumerated powers. Let's say the Congress makes a law like the Civil Rights Act. What is that in pursuant of within the enumerated powers? Well, it isn't. The Civil Rights Act is not a derivative of any enumerated power within the Constitution or a ratified power in the Constitution. And what I mean by that is an amendment that has been ratified. Therefore, the Civil Rights Act is strictly legislation that only applies to the District of Columbia. It is not the supreme law of the land. And as much as this upsets people, the only way it can become the law of the land is by amending the Constitution and granting the federal government those powers to basically create political correctness in this land. And I am telling you that in doing so, that would be letting the genie out of the bottle. I mean, if you don't already see how affirmative action and a lot of these other things that may have been considered a noble thought and intent have had nothing but nefarious outcomes and nefarious derivatives that have come from these types of programs and concepts, I am telling you, my friends, that it is far better to hold to the contract as they defined it. Do not let them continue to redefine and redefine as it suits them. Remember in kids' law? Remember when we were in elementary and somebody would start making up rules as they go along? That's exactly what you said. You're making it up as you go along. And that's what they've been doing for almost 200 years. They've been making it up as they go along, and it's as long as it suits them and aggrandizes their power so that they can do more and mean more to us and make us more dependent on them. It's all bad. It is all bad. What we have to do is we have to step in. It is time that everybody starts understanding their responsibility and standing up. Because if you stand up, then you will join me in reclaiming the Republic. I am G.R. Mobley, and that's exactly what I'm doing, but I need your help. So join me on Monday to find out whether I am giving you a recording in honor of Columbus Day or not. God bless, and we'll see you next week. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.